Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. And by the Tennessee Republican Assembly, a socially, morally, and physically conservative group of individuals committed to upholding the traditional Republican ideals that represent the American founders' original intent. We believe in God, family, and country. We believe in principles over politics. The TRA is the only rhino-free Republican organization in Tennessee. Visit our website at tnra.org. That's tnra.org. Has some great guests lined up for you tonight, and we have a packed show. We've got Mike Wilcher, who is running for a county commission seat in Warren County. He'll be our first guest, and then we'll have Mike Warner, who's running as a Constitution Party candidate, House District 67 in Montgomery County. Bob Rise updates us on his campaign for the 5th Congressional District, followed by Chris Carter, also running for congressional seat in the 5th District. Jan Black is running for county commission in Stewart County. He's going to respond to the county mayor's newspaper article about the budget and spending. Jan had written an article. The mayor responded. And, of course, we only have a weekly paper over here, so we're going to give Jan an opportunity to respond. And I did let the governor – I did invite the mayor to come on. Didn't hear anything from him, so maybe he'll call in tonight. And then we're going to have a roundtable with activists around the state on the petition to Governor Haslam to secure our state from the Obama-instigated illegal alien invasion. And the petition, if you have not signed it yet, you can find it at protecttnborders.com. That's protecttnborders.com. Before I give you some other updates, I just want to say that in case we run out of the time at the end, this is the last show for Inside Tennessee. I want to thank Tennessee Action Council for sponsoring this program, giving me this opportunity, and the Tennessee Republican Assembly as well. You know, the goal of this show was to be an outlet for conservative voices in Tennessee. And I am, of course, an amateur host, but I will stack the guests that I've had up on this show against any radio station in this state in terms of the number of conservative guests. You know, I've had some great some of the true conservative elected officials in this state have been on this site. The activists in this state, whether it's those fighting Common Core, those fighting for our Second Amendment rights, fighting against the illegal invasion, fighting the Islamist invasion. I've had the best of the best on this show, and I want to thank each and every guest who is the guests that are on the show tonight, and anybody who's been a guest. And I want to thank the listeners, and I appreciate you guys in the chat room that are there week after week. So we appreciate the support. Kind of hate to cut this thing off. Hopefully, I'll be back before long on another station. But we do appreciate you listening, and just keep up the good fight. The Tennessee Freedom Coalition is basically having an event tomorrow night to show support for Israel, the state of Israel. It's a rally at Tennessee State Capitol for Israel. You know, they are under attack. They're under siege by the Islamists in Gaza, and they are fighting for their life. And they are well within their rights to do everything they're doing. And so this is an opportunity, if you can be at the Capitol tomorrow from 6 to 8 p.m. in the evening, to show your support for Israel, please be there. Also tomorrow in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 6th District Circuit in Cincinnati, we'll hear cases basically challenging marriage in Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, and Michigan. We all have similar references to marriage in each of our constitutions, our state constitutions, and there's a 3-judge panel in the Sixth Circuit, which you know, their ruling is a very important ruling. Hopefully they will rule to defend traditional marriage, but that's something to pray about. If you go to David Fowler's website, Family Action Council of Tennessee, you can get more information on that, but you know, pray about that. That's going to happen tomorrow, and just pray that the judges will uphold traditional marriage. But even if they don't, you know, we still got to stand firm on what's right, and we know we're right on that one. And let's see, there was something. Okay, that's pretty much it in terms of updates. I know there's a lot more going on than that. I've got a full schedule tonight, and hopefully our first guest will be with us here in a few minutes. While we're waiting, I'll just fill you in on some other things. I actually saw, and maybe our roundtable will talk about this a little bit later on, I actually saw where in Memphis today, apparently they were issuing out Social Security cards to illegal aliens. And there was somebody who was videoing it, and I guess security ran them off. So if you know anything about that, if you've heard, if you have any firsthand information, you know, give us a ring and let us know about that. But it's just terrible what's going on in our country. And, you know, reference to the petition. It's no secret that the federal government has failed to secure our borders. Nobody denies that. Nobody, you know, you can't really blame the states for the federal government failing to secure our national borders. But you know what? The way I see it now is the ball is in the states' courts. And all the states, the governors of those states, and the legislatures of those states, they need to do everything they can to demagnetize their states. Okay, the federal government is in violation of most federal laws and not upholding their constitutional responsibilities, blatantly failing, deliberately undermining our country. Well, that's wrong. The president needs to be impeached, and that can happen if we just had enough people with backbone to make it happen. By the way, a lot of people say, well, the Senate under Harry Reid would never remove Obama. Well, it may be true that the Senate may or may not vote, but you got to remember, with impeachment, Harry Reid doesn't get to take a vote on whether or not they do impeachment. It's a completely different set of rules, and I'm still learning the particulars, but you know, there's basically a federal judge that will, and the Supreme Court is involved in this, all right? So it's not like the House passes a bill to do impeachment, and then the Senate decides to take it up or not. And they no. If the House impeaches, the Senate, under very strict guidelines, has to hear it. Now, they may very well, they may not vote to remove him, but they have to hear it. They don't have an option. Harry Reid cannot do a filibuster. Harry Reid cannot send it to a committee to die. So that's one of the things that people need to remember out there. And you know what? Even if the Senate doesn't do the right thing, we should insist that the House do the right thing. As disgusted as I am by the president and his administration, you know, the Republican House, they've been enablers. They've complained and they've campaigned on, you know, what Obama's doing wrong. But they have not upheld their oath. They have not used all the power they have. Tell me one thing they've really defunded. The only thing that got defunded at all was federal government. I mean, was the military, and a lot of that was not, you know, the impact has been greater on training and readiness, unfortunately, than what it was on some of the other programs in the military that, you know, probably could have been scaled back. So. There's a lot of blame to go around for the shape we're in. And as bad as Obama is, as big of a traitor as Obama is, as disgusting it is that we have enough people that would elect this guy, the GOP House has failed to do its job as well. And now it's up to our state. They're in our state now. So if they're within your state, the question has to be, what is your governor and what are your elected officials going to do to rid your state of illegal aliens? I really think that's the way we have to go. That's the route we have to take. And, you know, that takes some we're going to have to push our state to do that. Everybody's going to have to push their states to do that. They're not going to just willingly say, okay, this is a we know we didn't create this problem, but we're going to fix it for everybody. Well, no, fix it for your state, but we have to insist on it. We can't just wait for them to do it. We have to make them do it. It's kind of like, you know, there's so many things that the Congress could fix and could take on by, for instance, limiting what the Supreme Court hears, cases that Supreme Court hears. There's a lot of things, the laws that, you know, the Article 3, Section 2 gives the Congress the ability to limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. And they've done it. As recently as the 1990s on some legislation, they did it. Before, while they were debating some prison reform legislation, they wrote into the law, hey, this will not be under the review of the Supreme Court, words to that effect. So it can be done, but they don't generally like to do it because if it's controversial, they'd much rather have the court rule on it and say, hey, you know, the court did that. We didn't do that. I don't agree with it either, but there's nothing I can do, when there was something they could do. So we've got to hold our state officials as responsible as we hold our federal officials. You know, if they're in your state now, what is your state doing to get rid of them? And that's another thing. It's insane to me that you see the federal government, Obama, Holder, and others, ignoring federal law, refusing to secure the border, refusing, you know, arbitrarily deciding, okay, this class of illegals that are not allowed to be here according to federal law, we're going to allow them to be here. Just kind of like they arbitrarily decided, well, we're not going to defend DOMA. We're not going to defend this federal law, that federal law. And the federal government violates federal law, violates their oath of the Constitution, the people in the federal government do, the president on down. Yet when there's something that's going on in our state, a federal law that forces our state, let's say, for instance, the Supreme Court ruling that said illegal alien children are entitled to go to public schools. Well, that's not their lane. You know, there's not a federal school board. There may be, there is a Department of Education, shouldn't be, it wasn't until the 70s, and look how bad things have got since then. But for the states to rigidly follow federal law concerning immigration, concerning benefits that we supposedly have to give illegal aliens and services we have to supposedly provide these illegal aliens, when the federal government is not following federal law, that's insanity. You know, who else would do that? Who else would expect somebody to do that? If you signed a contract with somebody to provide security, let's say you owned a lot of property and you were a man of means, so to speak, and you hired a private security company to keep your property, to keep people off your property, and to keep you and your family safe, and you went out and you found, hey, man, they got a whole bunch of people camping over on the property. They're starting a little town over here. I got guys fishing on my in my pond. I've got these shady people over here, that are casing out my house. I think they're going to, you know, break in when I'm not paying attention. Would you continue to pay that company? Would you continue to honor the contract with that company? And everything I just said pales in comparison to what's going on the border. Yet our states, there's things they could do, but they'll say, well, federal law has been violated. Federal law should be pretty much null and void on this issue within the boundaries of our state. We should just, bottom line, do everything we can to drive every illegal alien out of Tennessee. And that's what we're going to have to do because the federal government's not going to do it. And, you know, if you ever want to return it to the way it was supposed to be, if you want the states to have the power they're supposed to have, you're going to have to insist they take it and they take the responsibility. You have to hold them accountable. One of the worst nightmares you can fall in America today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps protect your personal information using a combination of daily surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be glad that you did. Listen Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and the phone number is 718-305-7176. And I've got a caller on the line here. Caller, you have a question or a comment?
This is Mike. I'm up next.
Oh, hey. Mike, okay. Hey, you're a little bit early. The other guy hasn't popped up yet. hopefully he will. But if not, you know what? We're going to go ahead and start. If he shows up, we'll put you to the side for just a few minutes. But he's rapidly running out of time anyway. How's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going good. We're moving along. We've been biding our time a little bit because we didn't want to get people confused. We're not in the primary, so I didn't want people to go who could vote for us in November say, well, he wasn't on the ballot, because we don't believe that the taxpayers should have to pick up the cost of getting our candidates lined up for November. So we don't do that. But we've got some things lined up, and we have been doing a few things here locally. Yeah.
And we as the Constitution Party, you are one of the few Constitution Party candidates in this race, correct?
That's right. There's five of us that are actually in a partisan race, and in about 10 or so that are in nonpartisan races, county mayors and commissioners and things like that. But we've got a governor race. We've got a U.S. Congress. We've got a U.S. Senate. And we'll have a state Senate, and Tennessee House is me in 67th District against Joe Pitts, the Democrat, who has never seen a Second Amendment bill he liked. But that's another issue.
Yeah. Well, what kind of, and I understand that you haven't been full bore yet. You didn't want to confuse anybody, but obviously you're trying to get your name out there and get to know people and hopefully make some Democrats comfortable with voting for you, which I can understand in this day and age. If a Democrat somehow finally realized after all these years that, hey, wow, the party does not represent me if they claim to have any conservative beliefs at all, I can understand how they wouldn't necessarily rush out to the Republicans anymore. Have you converted any Democrats to the Constitution Party is what I'm asking.
Well, I've been talking in general terms to a lot of them. A lot of Democrats are just as fed up as Republicans are because they're not as far left as their party, and we're to the right of our party. So we've got some common ground there in a lot of ways. You know, I've been praying for many years that something would be done to put America back on track, that God would raise up leaders who would seek God's path and follow the biblical principles and the constitutional principles that brought us the freedom that, you know, you and I as veterans put our lives on the line to protect. We're not seeing that coming out of either party. And I'm right here in the middle of Fort Campbell, and my representative is not a veteran. There aren't too many Democrats who are, you know, generally speaking, even fond of veterans. I knew some people while I was on active duty that spent some time actually at the White House during Democrat reigns, and they got treated quite miserably as second-rate citizens. It was not a good feeling.
Would that be under the Clinton administration?
Yes. How'd you know?
I don't know. Just a lucky guess.
I can't imagine it'd be much different now, tell you the truth.
No.
But, you know, the founder's vision.
First.
Yeah. The founder's vision was to have representatives that would come from average people, who would serve not for their own gain, not for any other purpose than to serve and to make their city, county, state, nation a better place to live, knowing that they themselves would have to return to it when their term was up. We've got people now in power in both the state offices and the federal offices, even really a lot of the good old boys in local city and county offices, who just seem to think they're above the law. They don't have to pay any attention to it. And I think most people are getting tired of it. A Democrat may be in favor of all these programs, but when they see that they're not the favorite clique anymore, not the favorite group, then they're not represented either. And I think that's making an impression.
Well, now, what's if you do get elected, what are some of the things that you want to focus on in the state?
Well, I've got a lot of commitments. If you go to my website, electthevet.com, that's electthevet.com, it'll give you a lot of these things in detail. But I really am big on the Second Amendment. Common Core has got to be done away with, and my opponent is one of the top proponents for Common Core in the state. I've got on good authority from those that have been fighting in the trenches to get Common Core removed from Tennessee, that he's been one of the biggest blocks. So with him gone, then we've got at least one person more and there's a few more in Nashville, I've heard recently, at least have been advertising on the radio stations, that they have realized the dangers in Common Core. But we've got to kick that thing out of here. It's really nasty. I'm pro-life, and I'm really supporting this Amendment 1, and I don't want to ever fail to talk about Amendment 1 every time we get a chance to talk. A lot of people think that it's a pro-life amendment, and what it is it's a restoration of our rights as citizens to have laws made by our representatives the way we, the people, asked them to make it. And those rights were stripped away from us in 2000.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because actually the first show that we did last year, and one of the reasons the Tennessee Action Council came to be was because of Amendment 1. And they're still working on that issue. They're still working on the life issue. We haven't been quite as involved with Amendment 1 as we originally intended, but we're still working on that. But, you know, it's important to put it back where it belongs, like you said. And all it will do is will allow the people through the representatives to determine what, if any, restrictions there should be on abortion. Because right now, ever since 2000, the Supreme Court basically said, even if Roe v. Wade were overturned in Tennessee, the Tennessee Constitution protects abortion in all cases. And basically, you can't put any kind of limits or restrictions on it, no matter what. So all this will do, if we get it passed, is we'll make it neutral. And then your legislature will be able to do the will of the people, whatever that will may be.
Exactly. Right now, Tennessee is a destination state for abortions. One in four abortions done in Tennessee comes from out of state to do it, because all of the surrounding states have much more rigorous restrictions on the abortion industry. We can't even require an abortion facility in Tennessee to be licensed or inspected. Now, about half of them are, but half of them are not. And people need to be aware of that. If you're not pro-life, if you are pro-choice, and by the way, I understand the Planned Parenthood has decided to dump that term now. They want it done away with, because pro-choice has been just means pro-abortion.
That's what it's always meant.
but to the mark. And so they're wanting to dump that moniker. But the few laws that we still have on the books are only on the books because Planned Parenthood has not yet bothered to challenge them. And as soon as if Amendment 1 fails, and it's going to be tough, we've got to get out and tell people. If it doesn't pass, the next one to probably go will be the parental consent law. And what that means is, not only will your underage daughters be able to go without parents' consent and get an abortion, but little boyfriends will be bringing their little girlfriends from all the surrounding states to do the same thing. Is that really what we want Tennessee to be known as? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Now, your district 67, is that all in Montgomery County, or does it touch on part of another county?
It's all in Montgomery County. It's actually all in the city limits of Clarksville.
It's primarily a Democrat district. I mean, it's historically a Democrat district.
Well, when they redid the when they redistricted, of course, this last time, unlike every other time before, Republicans were in charge of redistricting and the Democrats were on the outs. Prior to this time, every time it was redistricted, of course, the Democrats held control and they had it chopped up for them. Well, I won't say that they cut this out for a Democrat, but what I will say is they cut as many Democrats as they could out from all the Republican districts as they could. So that what was left in them was Democrats. So I'm going to have to appeal to them, but I'm not going to do that if I have to betray my principles. The most important thing is the principles. I won't vote. I won't even vote in a race if there's not a principled person in that race to vote for. Turning over my power as a voter to someone else's agenda if I do that. And the next thing you know, they're saying, well, I won the election, so too bad for you. This is what we're going to do, and it may be 180 degrees from what I or most of the people voted for and wanted.
Yeah. Now, what kind of response have you gotten from this primarily Democrat district?
Really, really very well. I've been supportive of some things that are important to them. I want to take a look at our jail situation. Initially, I was in favor of the for-profit prisons, but I think it was a mistake because there is no interest by the for-profit prisons in turning someone out of the prison who won't come back to them. They like the boomerang.
Right.
So those are the another thing that it is good for both conservatives and liberals is removal of laws that just don't make sense anymore or excessive numbers of laws. There's so many laws out there, you can't do hardly anything without breaking the law some way, somehow. And if someone wants to get you and they know how to twist the law, they can. We've got to stop that. We've got to get back to common sense, basic laws that don't get in the way of our freedoms and end us up in the wrong place for no good reason.
You know, you're talking about our freedoms, and you hear a lot about the militarization of the police in our country, and I do think that's an issue. I don't live in Clarksville. I go there on a regular basis, but I see that. What's your opinion? Do you think there's some level of militarization of the police force in Clarksville and Montgomery County in general?
I haven't seen that much. There's John Fuson, who's running for sheriff here, and I may not have pronounced his name properly, but he's the only one here who has an understanding of what a constitutional sheriff is. The rest of them just look at you funny and cock their head. So if there is anybody here in Clarksville and you're voting on Thursday, John's your guy, okay, for sheriff. But
so you know him pretty well?
I've talked to him a couple of times. He came and talked to the Common Sense Coalition when he first entered the office. And he laid it out, and he had it exactly right. I haven't talked to him in depth recently, so I hope that hasn't changed. But I know the other guys have got it wrong.
Yeah. Well, I've heard other good things about him from other people. I was just curious how well you knew him. Going to go ahead and we're up against a break here in just a second. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design, Monday evenings at 8 Eastern, 7 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Monday, 8 Eastern, 7 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. All right, we're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We're talking to Mike Warner from District 67. He's running for the House seat there against Joe Pitts. He is one of the few Constitution Party candidates in the state. Mike, how many other Constitution Party candidates did you say there were?
There's a total of 5 on the ballot partisan races that will be on the race in November. Including myself, it's not been possible for us to do this. We've had to go to court since 1961, when the Democrats put into place election laws that were really designed to prevent minorities who were soon to get the vote. And it was inevitable. They wanted to make sure that they stayed within the Democrat Party and didn't go wandering off and making one of their own. So since then, they've basically made it almost impossible for minor parties in Tennessee to get on the ballot. For instance, if the judge hadn't ruled in our favor this year, I would have been required to collect 40,000 signatures to get on the ballot. Of course, Republicans, Democrats, and Independents only need 25. There's only about 34,000 registered voters in my district, and only about 25,000 of them vote on any regular basis.
Let me ask you this. You said that a judge made – now, that was a federal judge, not a state judge,
federal,
right?
Judge, 6th District.
Okay. Now, right. And I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here, and somebody brought this up to my attention. I have to – you know, first, before I say this, what did the state Supreme Court say? Because I'm assuming you went through the state Supreme Court all the way up. I mean, that's the way that normally works.
That was before I was actually in the party. I was a Republican 2 years ago, but I repented.
Okay.
So.
I got you. Well, and I'm with you. I'm in the Constitution Party as well. But I guess my point is, being as the Constitution Party is about the Constitution, and most things in the Constitution, if you follow it, should be state decisions, as bad as and as unfair as that decision of the state was, since the state makes election laws, is it kind of counter to what the Constitution Party believes to take it to a federal judge? And if not, why not?
Well, that was our only option. It is not right and proper to allow unjust and immoral laws to stand. And so it is not the best way to go, but it's the only opportunity we had. In actuality, the truth of the matter is that Amendment 1 is not the best way to proceed on restoring the Tennessee Constitution. The Tennessee Constitution is fine the way it is. What should have happened is the judges should have been dismissed and told not to rule on that anymore, as is the power of the state House and Senate to do, just as it is for the Congress to do in the case of the federal courts.
Yeah, Article 3, Section 2 for the federal. What's do you remember do you remember the sections for the state where it basically allows the state to limit?
I don't have it at the top of memory. I don't have it at the top of memory. But it, what happened, I think it was in 1989, the Democrat legislature, again, it was still Democrat, got together and created an act, and I don't refer to them as laws because if they're not in line with the Constitution, according to Madison, they're not a law. They're an illegal and immoral act. But they created an act which gave the Tennessee Supreme Court the right to rule on what was and was not constitutional. Now, if they'd done that as a constitutional amendment, it would have been fine.
Right.
Grant powers to the courts that aren't in the Constitution, Tennessee Constitution. So there's a lot of things that are, because they've been so far out of alignment, you have to take the path that's available. And that, you know, that would be my thinking on it. You know, I'll ask our attorney and see.
There's something you said at the very beginning, and I've had discussions with other people about this, and you mentioned that you didn't think it was right for the taxpayers to have to pick up the tab for selection of our candidates. You know, I really do think it's wrong. The primaries are a party function, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't be able to use the state and county apparatuses, but I think they should have to pay for that. You know, whether you're talking Democrat, Republican, whoever, they should have to pay their share. If you've got two parties, then they split the cost of the primary.
Exactly. Furthermore, local elections really ought to be in November when the most people show up.
That's not a bad idea either. Not a bad idea.
You know, and while we're talking about this, one of the bills that I intend to bring forward if I'm elected would require every election in the state of Tennessee, if it does, any candidate that does not receive at least a 50% plus one vote, there has to be a recount. And the reason why that's important is on the local level, you got the good old boys that keep themselves being elected by encouraging all these guys to run and suck off the votes of the common people, and then they've got their little constituency that they actually do serve that keeps them elected. But that'll also do something. Yeah.
What you said just jarred something. Just reminded me of something. Here in Stewart County, there were some county commissioners who were not going to run again. They just weren't interested. And because a guy who other officials in the county know this guy, that if he gets elected, they know he will hold their feet to the fire, even though he's only running for a commission seat, and that's Jan Black, he'll be on a little bit later, they know that it's game over once he's in there. And so they encouraged these other people who were not going to run so that they could kind of keep their little majority thing going there and try to offset it. And matter of fact, one guy was in Jan's district who was not going to run, but they convinced him to run. So that's kind of, those are some of the games they play, and I'm sure that goes on in counties across this state.
Well, and the other thing that, that this simple majority rule would do is take all the arguments out of splitting the vote.
Yeah.
We as conservatives outnumber liberals 2-1. Okay, but we get tricked by the system, the way it's set up. With that gone away, they couldn't rely on that excuse anymore. Then allowing minor parties to get in there, and here's the thing you have to think about when you talk about minor parties getting equal access. And by the way, the Tennessee Constitution says elections shall be free and equal. But what that will do is when enough of us are in there, it will no longer be possible for any party to ever get a supermajority again. A supermajority is evil. I don't care what kind of people you put in there, you give them that much power, it will be corrupted.
Well, I will say not only in the case of the Tennessee Supreme, in the case of the Tennessee supermajority, as far as conservatives are concerned, I would say it qualifies as evil, but it's also worthless. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we've got a supermajority in a red state, and we can't get anything conservative passed. We have to fight tooth and nail to make something like that happen. And that's all because of the open primaries and not having a 50% plus one, like you mentioned, and we have Democrats picking our candidates. Have liberals.
Exactly.
Let me correct it. We have liberals picking our candidates.
Well, yeah, the crossover. Statewide, thus far in this primary, people declaring Republican is 2-1 over people declaring Democrat. Now, I supported Mark Green in the last election during his primary, and I knocked on a lot of doors myself, running as a write-in candidate, and I can tell you I ran into more people than I could ever count who, when I told them, yes, I'm working off of a Republican list, just hooted and, oh, no, I've never voted Republican in my life. You must have it wrong. They must, you know, no, it's what the, you know, records show, okay? So to say that they're not doing it is absurd. And to have, but they do it for the whole primary thing was driven by the progressives back in the early 1900s, the late 1890s and following. That was a push they did so they could control the outcome of races with money. And it's worked.
It continues to work.
When you add on to that an open primary, you've doubled down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, doubling down on Stu. But, hey, I've got to get this read in here real quick. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Mike, we're just about out of time here, but do you want to tell the listeners about your websites, any upcoming events you have?
You bet. Electcom, electthevet.com is the website. You can find information there. The Constitution Party of Montgomery County, Tennessee, meets the last Thursday of each month in Shoney's at 6:30 on Riverside Drive. Come on down. We'll probably talk some more about Common Core because I'm starting to get some teachers interested in they don't want to be public, but they're willing to tell some of their stories, and I'll have some of those to share. But I did want to mention one more thing, and that is I did a recent tally on those that on the election and those that are running. All 99 representatives and half the Senate are up for election. That's about 116 to 117 seats, depending on the year. But I was appalled to find out that 45 of those seats are unopposed. Okay, they have made sheeple out of us. Nobody stands up. People need to stand up. I'm standing up. My opponent would have been unopposed had I not stood up. Take a look at that. Look at the counties that are unopposed, and find somebody that's not a legisheeple to get in there. But it's Mike Warner, electthevet.com.
Well, Mike, thanks for coming on, and good luck to you, and we'll be talking to you. And the statewide Constitution event is Saturday, August 23rd in Jackson, Tennessee. I want to say at Union University, and what's the timeline?
It's not in my head. I'm sorry.
Okay. But anyway, I just want to let everybody know about that. Hey, thanks again, and we'll be in touch. Take care. Thanks for coming on.
God bless.
God bless. All right, and we've got our next guest lined up, Bob Rise. He is running for the 5th Congressional District. How are you doing tonight, Bob?
It's doing good. And it's Reese, but they can call it Johnson if they want, as long as they vote for me.
Okay, and I apologize. I always mess up your name for some reason, but I appreciate you coming
on. That's right. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
And you're a veteran as well?
I am a veteran. Army 1958 to 1964.
Ah, okay.
Disabled Army veteran. I got hurt a little bit, so the VA takes care of me, so I'm extremely interested in going up to Washington and do what I can to straighten out the VA situation.
Okay. Well, we had you on a few weeks back, and can you just kind of tell us how your campaign's going and anything else you want to talk to us about in terms of legislation that, you know, obviously the veterans issues are tops with you, are important to you?
Yes. Well, I think the campaign's going very well. We've run a pretty good campaign. We've been on radio and television, got about 750 signs out. We've had about as much as people hate them, they do work. A couple sets of robocalls, and they have people going door to door. And we work the polls for early voting. So I think we're going very, very well. I believe we will win Dixon and Cheatham counties. And so far in early voting, and those two counties have voted 1,000 Republicans. So if they match that on election day, that would be 12,000. And that if I win both counties, as I should, then that would give me 6,000 to 7,000 votes going into Davidson County, which we've been working for quite a while. So should be pretty good.
So you have Davidson, Cheatham, and what was the other county?
And Dixon.
Dixon,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, how did you do in those counties last time?
I won Dixon County 3-1 over the eventual nominee and 2-1 over him in Cheatham County.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you should be pretty strong in both of those. Robocalls, so I got to ask, because I've had two. How many robocalls from Lamar Alexander have you got this week?
Actually, I don't think I've received any.
Really? Okay.
No. Yeah, I've received a couple from people, but none from Lamar. No.
Yeah, I'm just kidding, because you know, for an incumbent, he seems to be awful concerned. So we'll see how that one turns out. Hopefully, Joe will run over Lamar.
It kind of looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He seems to be concerned, yes.
So January 2015, if you're up there, kind of give us your top three, top five things that you want to work on.
Okay. The first thing that I want to do is try to get a House rule installed. And I want to do that by reminding every legislature up there that they take the same oath. And it ends with, They will bear true allegiance to the Constitution, and then they say, so help me God. So they're asking God to help them bear true allegiance to the Constitution. So I want to remind them of their oath, requesting God to help them, and ask them how they square that when having asked God to help them follow the Constitution when they knowingly pass legislation not authorized by the Constitution. And what I want to do is find 216-217 that takes that oath seriously. And when I find them, I will want to pass a House rule, which only takes 218 votes, which says that when you introduce legislation into the House, you must include in the legislation where in the Constitution we're authorized to deal with that. Can you imagine how that would help the country?
Well, I think they actually passed one similar to that a couple of years ago, and they seem to be ignoring it quite a bit. But, I mean, you know, I guess can't hurt to remind them some more. You know, I think the main thing is we got to have more people that hold them accountable and expect them to actually uphold their oath and are unforgiving about that at election time.
And that will be me. And I'm in the Hall of Fame for Toastmasters International, so I can debate them. I'm 74 years old. I have been shot, stabbed, and beat up on, so there's not much they're going to do to scare me. And I'm not going up there as a freshman. I'm transferring in as a senior. So I will get said what needs to be said.
Then so now, wait a minute. You're not concerned about Nancy Pelosi? I mean, I think she was getting ready to chase some guy down on the floor the other day.
Is she going to be sitting across the hill from me with a mortar shooting at me? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
And then the first law that I'd like to introduce is that the Constitution says in the First Amendment that the Congress shall pass no laws respecting the establishment of a religion, which simply means they should pass no laws establishing a church of the United States. Nothing about separation of church and state whatsoever, because some of the states had state churches at the time. But the big one I'm concerned about, after that it says, comma, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And it does not say except for kids reading the Bible and praying in school. It does not say except for cities putting up a nativity scene or a cross. So I want to have a law passed that requires the Attorney General of the United States in every instance where someone files suit against a city for wanting to put up a nativity scene or a cross, or for a child for reading the Bible or praying, or a coach just simply thanking God because everybody got through with no injuries, then I want that Attorney General to represent the people and go into the court and say to the judge, you must dismiss the case. And the reason you must dismiss the case is because there's no basis in law. And there cannot be a basis in law because the Constitution says there can't be. I don't know where in the devil we got so far off from these nutty judges. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, we should not. And that's the thing. I was talking about this a little bit earlier. Article 3, Section 2 limits the Congress can limit what the Supreme Court rules on anyway. They can limit their appellate jurisdiction. So half of the controversial junk that makes it to the court would never make it there if the Congress would use the powers they have and say, hey, you know what, this is going to be a decision made by Congress, and Supreme Court, you have no appellate jurisdiction on this particular issue. And they can do that. They've done it in the past.
They can't do it constitutionally. They can't do it constitutionally. They pass the law. Congress. They cannot pass a law dictating to the Supreme Court what they're going to do or can't do.
Article 3, Section 2 gives them the authority to limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. They did it as recently as the 1990s on prison reform. So they can do it, and they have done it in the past. They just usually don't do it.
Well, now, Article 3, Section 2 in the second paragraph, it tells them in the Constitution what they must do. And in the Constitution, it says, if a state is involved in a case, the Supreme Court is the court of original jurisdiction and not an appellate court. And I had this, we had lunch with Judge Gonzalez. And I pointed out to him, I said, you know, Article 3, Section 2, paragraph, states that if a state is involved in a case, the Supreme Court is the court of original jurisdiction and not an appellate court. So with Congress being the representatives of the states, then they are involving the states in the Boehner case. So why is the Supreme Court not the court of original jurisdiction there? And obviously couldn't answer it. And it's because they don't follow the Constitution. Does that make sense?
Well, it doesn't make sense that they don't follow it, but we know that they don't follow it.
We know they don't follow it, yes.
That's for sure. We'll agree to disagree on your reading of Article 3, Section 2, but I think we both agree that they are way out of bounds. And the Supreme Court, I know good and well that it was never the founders' intent. If you go back and read what the founders had to say about the judiciary, it was never intended to have the amount of power that it has.
People say that there are three equal branches of government. It was never established that way. The Congress was always established to be the strongest branch of government. And then the executive branch second, and the judicial branch, clearly the weakest, because they never gave them the power to even establish their lower courts. That power was given to Congress. So it is the weakest branch. Excuse me, I'm sorry. But
that's fine.
We have no control on them. A lot of people think that the people in the Supreme Court are appointed for life, but they're not. They're appointed for good behavior. But the problem is they left no checks and balances on the good behavior. Now, what I would like to see is an amendment to the Constitution that says that they ratify them every 6 years. That way it would give the Senate the chance to look at them and see if they have, in fact, followed Article 3, really, which is what they're charged of doing. Certainly a Supreme Court justice that goes to Egypt and says, when you're doing your new Constitution, I'm sorry, folks, but, hey, I'm about over it, but it's this summer duel that everybody's got. What she did was she said, when you're writing your Constitution, don't follow the United States Constitution, follow South Africa. Now, in my opinion, that's not acting in good behavior, and I think she should have been taken off the court.
Well, there's so many things that so many of them should have been removed for. They've been looking to foreign law for years and years, that should been enough to have gotten rid of some of them.
I agree. Well, now really, I'm going to lose every lawyer's vote on this one. Are you ready for this? When they were writing the Constitution, there was a discussion about making juries all attorneys. And Thomas Jefferson said, no, I don't want attorneys on the juries. I want farmers on it because I want everything decided with common sense. Well, I don't think that we should have judges or lawyers on the Supreme Court. It is not a legal document. It is a historic document under which all laws are to be written. I believe we would be better off as a country if historians sat on the Supreme Court. You would
most of your historians today have a liberal view, an extreme liberal view. You'd be hard pressed to find an historian in most universities that have an original intent outlook on our founding documents. So I don't know that they would do any better than the lawyers.
Well, I don't know because I have degrees in business and economics, but I actually have more hours, college hours, in history and political science. And I would say that I'm farthest thing from a liberal that you would want. But
but you're not a typical professor that they would be choosing from. That's who they would choose from, is they would go from these Ivy League professors, and we get the same garbage, only it would be Ivy League professors versus these liberal justices.
Well, when we amended it, then we would put in there a system of checks and balances, like reconfirming every 6 years or something like that. But if they – and that's another thing. I don't think anybody should be appointed to the Supreme Court and ratified unless they have Article III memorized. Article 3 memorized. It's not that much.
And then question if they understand what the heck they're saying. How's something like that sound?
Yeah.
I got off on a tangent there, but these are the things that I truly believe. And I believe in the Constitution. I'm a constitutional scholar, and I'll debate any of them. Pretty well hold my own, if not whip them. But
I'm up against a hard break here, a hard break. It'll be a short one, but I do have to take it. So don't go away. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'll be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Just when you think you've heard everything, those leftists in D.C. pull something else. They're going to keep on doing this until we, the people, run them out of town on a rail. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food and who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn your world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure you can provide for your family in emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. You'll find everything from the emergency food supplies to the great patriotic gear you need today and in the future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and we have Bob Reese on the phone, on the line with us. And Bob,
back to you. I would just like to say, I'm going to do a little bit of campaigning here now for a second. I think it's extremely important that we put more veterans up there. Less than 20% of the people in Congress ever served on active duty. I'm the only military veteran running. And I believe I can carry that against Jim Cooper. Got to get the Republican nomination first, of course. But then I think I'll be able to teach Jim Cooper the definition of term limits, and I think a 20-year term is long enough. I'm a businessman. I'm 74, so if they screw up, they got built-in term limits with me. But I'll be a person of the people because I'm living it. So I started out poor, but I started my first suit of clothes was an Army uniform. Got out, went to school on a GI Bill. Took me 7 years to get my first degree, but had to work my way through. And I've started three businesses from scratch. So I've created jobs. I'm the only one running either in the primary or Cooper who has created jobs in the private market. I understand how those federal regulations, which are unconstitutional, not a one number constitutional, jobs, and really ruin our economy. So I'll be looking to get some of those sunset also.
Okay. Do you have any upcoming events or anything on your website?
No, everybody can go to my website, though. It's BobReeseForCongress.com. Reese is spelled R-I-E-S. And when you go to vote, I'll be the smallest name on the ballot, Bob Reese, with the biggest heart, of course, okay? And please go to my website. They can find out a whole lot about me. I've got pretty much opinions on everything. You know, I've got a way to close the border
100% within 30 days and not cost us a dime.
Let's hear it. That,
okay, all right. Now, part of the things that I did when I was in the Army, I was in air traffic control. I know that every military pilot has to get so many flight hours in order to keep a flight status. Let's have the fixed-wing aircraft with the AWACS on them fly along the borders to get their hours up. Doesn't matter to them whether they fly along the border or fly over the mountains or the deserts. And then also for the rotary aircraft, the helicopters, they have them fly along the border. Then they put up maybe about 3 blimps that they're using over in Afghanistan. And then identifies anything going wrong or anything unusual on the border and flash the coordinates to the border patrol, which should not be civilian, because the civilians are unionized and they take orders from bureaucrats. The people who are responsible for protecting our borders are the U.S. military. Well, I was stationed at Fort Hood, Texas. I know that those troops can cover most of the Texas border. I was stationed at Fort Bliss, Texas. I know they can cover the rest of the Texas border and the New Mexico border. I was stationed at Fort Huachuca, Arizona. I know they can take care of the Arizona border. And then with tug-in-cheek, a tease to our Marine buddies, I think they ought to be able to cover the southern border of California. They will not get through our troops. We stand at the line, at the border. They won't get in. And I don't care what happens on the other side.
Yeah, I'm for a full-fledged DMZ on our southern border. Well, Bob, I appreciate you coming on. Best of luck to
you
in the campaign.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks again.
And folks, get out and vote, please, and vote for Bob Reese, shortest name on the ballot in the Republican primary. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. All right, now. And we have our next – bye now. Take care, Bob. We have our next guest who is also running in the 5th District, and I think this is the right number here. Chris, how are you?
Doing fine this evening, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and I'm speaking with Chris Carter. He's also running in the 5th Congressional District. He's one of Bob's competitors, and I haven't had a chance to have you on before, and we really haven't had a chance to talk a whole lot, so I'll just let you kind of take the lead here. You can tell people a little bit about yourself and why you're running and what you hope to accomplish.
Okay, great. First of all, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk with you just a little bit. I got into this race because I'm the father of 3 kids, and I was a full-time single father from about 1998 on. So I finished raising my kids by myself, and we were a really close-knit for that reason. And the 2 girls got married 2 years ago this summer. And, you know, I wasn't really ready to be a grandfather, but they came to me a couple of months back and said, you know, we think we're ready to maybe start a family. And I realized that, you know, I think I'm ready for this. And then I got to thinking about it, and I realized, you know, with the way things have been going in the country, I began to wonder what the America would be like that my grandkids were going to grow up in. You know, I'm from the generation where I still remember going to sleep at night with the doors unlocked. And that's not something that too many of us do these days. And I'm looking at the national debt. I'm looking at the trouble that Social Security is in. I'm looking at the way government has expanded. And I said, you know, I just can't sit on the sidelines. I've never been one that's sedentary anyway. I had to get involved. So I started looking at the political map and the landscape, and I decided, you know, I'm going to do something about this. I think I'm going to run for Congress, and I'm going to put my name out there and give the people a choice. So that's kind of how it all got started. I've been following politics very closely since the 1980s. I voted for Ronald Reagan in 1980. Actually was raised in a Democrat household, conservative Democrat. My dad voted for John Kennedy. So when I turned 18, I registered Democrat and voted for Jimmy Carter. But 4 years of that, and as I grew, you know,
you were
started
cured after
tour,
that.
I was, well, you know, the Democrat Party used to be the conservative party. It really did. And there's a lot of folks in the, you know, especially in District 5 who are conservative people, but they're loyal to their party, but their party has left them and did so a long time ago. So I started listening to this guy named Ron Reagan, And he would say something, and I would say, well, you know, I believe that. And he would say something else. I would say, you know, I believe that too. And next thing you know, I realized, well, I'm a principled fellow. I believe in principle, and this man does too. So I registered Republican, and the rest was history after that. So, you know, I've always been politically aware really thinking nationally, concerned about my country, a love of country, love of God and of country, and a family man. And now that the kids are grown, the two girls are married. Nathan, the boy, is in the middle. He's out in California now. He finished up his master's degree. Whitney has her master's degree. Katie's married to an entrepreneur, and they live in Boston. So I thought, you know, I'm in a perfect age and the perfect time to do something like this, and I'm going to give something back to a country that's been so very good to me. So we had a number of goals we wanted to reach in this campaign, and so we've reached all of them except for the election, which we'll have an answer one way or the other on the Thursday evening. And so we've had a chance to shape the public policy debate. When we started the campaign, no one knew we were out here. No one knew my name. Now we have Middle Tennessee talking about Chris Carter. So we think we've already scored some victories, but we're anticipating and expecting a victory on Thursday night. So glad to be here and ready to talk about the issues.
Well, okay, let's talk about you know, some of the things you'd like to accomplish. What, I mean, people you say are having a positive response. What are the issues that you're talking about that they're responding positively to?
We have reached out really deep into the millennial age group, which is the age of my three children, and I've had a lot of traffic on our website, and we have an email link there, and people have been writing to me. And a lot of things that they're concerned about is this national debt. You know, I have a ticker on the campaign web that's – I'm sitting here actually looking at it now. It's $17.6 trillion, and that's the national debt. At this time, it's projected to be $20 trillion by the end of the Obama presidency. The debt in this country is a headwind to job creation, and it's a threat to the futures of the millennial generation. It's a threat to all of us, but particularly to them. And a lot of the email I've been getting has been a concern about that. So when they've heard me talking about how I want to reduce the national debt, I want to join that coalition of legislators, and we want that voice to get bigger and stronger, and the only way to do that is for the voters to send people up there who want to shrink that national debt and cut the wasteful spending. So that is something they're deeply concerned about. It's something I'm tightly focused on. I believe we can do that. I happen to favor the penny plan, where you reduce the spending by 1% per year before, using a zero baseline growth, which is — a lot of people don't realize this, but Congress adds 7% to their expenditures every year automatically. And then they proceed to debate about how much of that increase they're going to cut. And it sounds like a cut in the debate. A lot of the American people think they're cutting, but they're not cutting spending at all. The difference is how much less they're going to spend of that increase. And then that ends up being an increase. Of course, then if there's not enough revenue coming in and tax revenue coming in, they borrow the difference, and that's where the deficit spending comes from. So in the penny plan,
whatever plan you use, none of that will work as long as your borders are wide open and there's no way to project what you're going to need the next year.
You heard that discussion today. I believe it was on one of the local radio stations where the job growth is higher among immigrants, both legal and illegal, than it is among Native Tennesseans. So you're right about that. It's a huge, huge problem. And if we can't control our own borders, we can't dictate or specify or make any other kind of assertion, because we don't have control, especially of our southern border. We absolutely must get that under control.
And what's your thought? I mean, I would assume as a conservative you would not support amnesty, but I'll let you speak for yourself on that.
I would not support amnesty.
Under any name?
No, and that's the problem. Here again, if we can't control the borders, if we can't demonstrate that we have the ability to allow people in that we want, that want to and desire to under our law. What else matters? We don't. We're demonstrating
right.
we don't have control. How can we, you know, specify any other kind of criteria? So the first absolute, and it has to be an exclusive tenet, we have to close the border, demonstrate that we've closed it, that it's secure, and do that for something like a year. Verify,
yeah.
trust but verify, Reagan used to say, that it's actually
right.
working and whatever measures we've taken are actually working. And then we can have a discussion about what the American citizens want to do next. So I really don't see how
okay.
discussing, you know, that was my concern about the whole, and, you know, Jim Cooper, who is the representative in District 5, made a comment earlier in the year about he thought that reform could get done, immigration reform could be done this year, and that's just, I just don't see how that can be when we've not had actual control of the border for years.
Yeah, and I personally think I would shut it down for at least 5 years to sort out, demagnetize, cut off that. Bottom line, if you're here illegally, you're not entitled to anything other than a bus ticket home, unless you have committed a crime and you pay your time for your crime, and then you get a bus ticket home. And I really think they should crack down on these people who hire them. I don't have any sympathy for the people that hire them, especially those who knowingly hire them. What are some of the other things that you'd like to accomplish if you're elected?
Well, I'd like to see us do something about tax reform. The United States government in 2013, I believe, took in almost $1.5 trillion in revenue, and it was a record
wow.
year for revenue, yes, in 1 year. And still it's not enough. There is still deficit spending going on. Can you imagine? And that goes back to the whole getting our own house in order. How can we have a strong and robust military that we're both willing and able to respond for our national security interest? How can you make war in those cases where it becomes expedient without a war chest? If we don't have our own house in order, how can we respond? Nothing else is going to matter if our economy stays flat. And the manner in which we collect tax revenue every year has grown and grown and grown, and it's unfair, and it's cumbersome, it's expensive, and now we have the Internal Revenue Service, who is one of the most feared agencies in the federal government, and American people actually have fear of this agency, and that is not at all what the founders intended. And it's really quite irresponsible when we could dramatically flatten the tax rates, the system out, get rid of a lot of the bureaucracy, and go to something that's flatter or that's based on consumption or something similar to that. So
we
need to do that, and we can do it. It's not so much that we lack for good ideas. It's that we don't have lawmakers in Washington who have the courage and the will to do it. And that's where it goes back to the voters, Dave. The voters can speak loudly in these elections, and we're coming up here on these primaries and then the general in November. The voters have an opportunity to vote these candidates in who will go up there and make these tough decisions.
Now, you may have already covered a little bit of your background in terms of what kind of life experience, work experience.
Yeah, I got my degree in electronics. I graduated from a college there in Oklahoma where I'm from. I moved to Tennessee in 1998. I started out in the information technology business in its literal primordial stages. So my career grew and expanded with the tech business as it exploded, and I found myself moving from hardware electronic technologies and sciences into software sciences. So I moved into computer sciences and became later involved with database designs, and then moved into database architecture and system software design. So after about 2 or 3 years, right out of college, there were businesses, accounting firms, and so on and so forth, coming to me privately and asking me if I would come consult with them. And my consulting career was born that way, because I had a talent for being a root cause analysis guy, a problem solver. And, you know, when you're a computer scientist, you don't have the the luxury of guessing. You don't get to guess at things. You have to devise solutions, and you know, computers are just overgrown calculators, so they're working the math all the time. So if, when you're writing software, if it's not right, it will become obvious. So I've learned to think critically and strategically and logically, and to identify root cause problems and then to bring solutions to the table. So as a consultant, I've done large projects. I've hired people. I've created jobs. The previous caller made the comment he's the only one that's created jobs. It's not true. I've created jobs with big projects. Currently, right now, I'm working for a large healthcare company in the Nashville area, and they're working with the electronic health record systems, enterprise systems. And so I've spent a career helping businesses improve their accounting, their processes, their transaction processes, et cetera, and worked in a variety of industries as a software guy and a database architect. I was a father of three kids. I built an experimental aircraft in 2006 to 2008 in my private workshop, and then flew it from Nashville to Phoenix solo and back. Still have that airplane. It's a great joy, and it was a great science experiment.
And, yeah, that's
let's
great.
Let's see. I'm the author of two books. Published author of two books. Go ahead.
Really, what books? What books?
First book was a fiction, a novel called The Legend of Evil. It's available on Amazon by writing under a pen name. But it's called The Legend of Evil. You can order it online. And then last year, I published the second book. This one was not fiction. It was a book of maxims or one-liners, truisms, people call them sometimes, that I have penned over the years, over a 20, 25-year period, where I would learn a particular lesson or achieve a goal, and something would come out of that, and I would write this thing down in a one-line form as a way for me to remember the lesson. And I always thought that someday I would compile this and put it into a book, and early last year, I decided it was time to do that. So what I would do is I broke it up into three sections. The title of the book is called No God, No Self, No Others, and it's spelled K-N-O-W. And it was, as I worked through all these and began to review them, I realized that your relationship to the Creator, your relationship to others, and your personal self-awareness are the three main areas that we really grapple with in life. The decisions we make, why we believe what we believe, and the responsibility that we have for and to each other does matter when we live in community. And that certainly involves politics. So the book has quite a bit of political commentary in it as well.
It
was published last year.
I've got a question for you. You've got quite a list of the comments here. I do have a question for you. And this is, you know, based on something that somebody asked me about, and I don't know, because I'll be honest with you, I've not followed the race all that close. Although I've had John Smith on, I've had Bob on, now I've had you on. The question was brought up about the district is Davidson County, Cheatham County, and Dixon County, correct?
That's correct.
Right. And you live in which one of those three counties do you live in?
I live down Hillsborough Road, 7 miles outside the district in Williamson County.
I didn't know you could run outside the district.
Well, a lot of people think that. One of the other opposing candidates has been running around saying that. But the fact of the matter is there are three maximum impositions that the Constitution makes on a federal candidate in order for him or her to be qualified to run. They are: you must be 25 years of age, you must be a United States citizen for at least 7 years, and you must reside in the state in which you intend to represent.
Not the county. Okay. Not necessarily the
That's
district.
It.
Okay. Okay. But I am curious, why would you run, why you would run in a district you don't live in? I'm just curious about that. But,
well, 7 miles outside the district line, this was after the gerrymandering. And when you look at Tennessee, there are 9 districts, 7 of them are red. And I did some research on District 5, and there's quite a bit of history and research. It's the seat of Andrew Jackson. And it's a Middle Tennessee question. It's a constitutional question, and it's an American question. And I happen to think that close to other districts around where I live in actually seven miles south of the dip line in five. I live in seven where Marsha Blackburn is congressman. And I thought, you know, this is a chance for me to run. I want to run here. And I thought it was a good idea to go after a Democrat rather than run against a Republican in one of the other districts that I think is doing a pretty good job.
And, I mean, you do have some, I mean, it's not like you're never in the district. And I imagine you had some ties to the district even before the campaign, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Well, the 7 miles, I could ride my bicycle in 10 minutes to get into District 5. You know, and that has been a concern, I think, with a few people. But it's people don't know that it's at the federal level, there's the maximum impositions of the three that I just recounted. And because I think there is some political tradition involved, I just said, listen, you elect me, I'll move into the district.
Okay. Well, okay, fair enough. Hey, I appreciate you coming on. We're about out of time. And good luck to you. And I'm sure I'll be running into you somewhere else down the line. And just wish you the best of luck.
I really appreciate
you coming on as well.
Yes, I thank you. People can visit my website, elect.clcarter.com, to find out more and be asking for your vote come Thursday evening.
All right. Hey, take care. Thanks again.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. And right before we go on break, we're going to have a break here in a few minutes, but we've got one of our last guests. This is Jan Black. He's running for the 7th District in Stewart County, which is where I live. He's running for county commissioner. How you doing tonight, Jan?
Hey, good. Yourself, Dave?
Pretty good. We've got a break in a few minutes, but I want to go ahead, if we can. You've written a couple articles over the last couple years in the local paper, the Stewart Houston Times, and you really follow what's going on in the county close, and you know how things are supposed to work financially because of your background, and you can talk about that a little bit if we have some time. But taxes and spending are just as big of an issue in Stewart County as they are in D.C. We just do it on a smaller scale. But you wrote a letter airing out some complaints and concerns. The county mayor responded. There wasn't enough time for you to get a letter in before the election because we only have a weekly paper. So, and I did, for the record, I did send an email to the county mayor. He's not a bad guy. I don't necessarily agree with what goes on in county government, but he's not a bad guy. And let him know that he had an opportunity if he wanted to come on. Didn't respond. Maybe he'll call in tonight. Maybe he won't. But let's just kind of go over this letter a little bit. We will have to take a break in a few minutes, but let's cover as much ground as we can. And the mayor's letter says, in response to Jan Black's letter, June 15th edition, this is from Mayor Rick Joyner, as Stewart County Mayor, I can say taxes are not on the rise. Mr. Black's statements are oversimplified and erroneous numbers were used. These are complex issues. It is naive to think that we can simply pick and choose which services to fund, such as housing criminals or providing more EMS or fire and rescue services. Why? What is more important to Stewart County, EMS or a large? Actually, you're responding there to his statement that they can't pick and choose.
Well,
your response was,
you can pick and choose, and you should pick and choose. What's more important to the citizens of the county? 128-bed jail, or for a emergency vehicle to show up when you're ill?
you
bring it down to brass tacks. We don't need to house prisoners from the other counties or from the state. We needed to build a jail that met our needs. I don't disagree that we needed to build a jail, but we needed to build one that would meet our needs, not build a Taj Mahal, not build a 128-bed high-rise so that we can house other prisoners and create more county jobs. You know, right now, Stewart County's county employees are the number one employer in a county is the county. And we're just going to add more employees to that.
Yeah. And you mentioned the debt a little bit, and, of course, a smaller jail would have meant a smaller debt.
Correct.
And the mayor also writes, the state of Tennessee mandates inmate minimum standards and regulations that must be met. County officials held off building a new jail to replace our current jail built in 1960 as long as possible to avoid additional expense. 6 years ago, a committee was formed to members of members inside and outside of the government to assist the commission on what decision would be best for the county. And your response to that is pretty much what you said, jails should meet the needs of the county.
Right.
Yes, they had to do one, but they did not have to do 128. And, of course, they think they're going to make money on this. That's their goal. They think they're going to make money on it.
Yep, but they have to be able to bring in over $560,000 a year just to meet the payment on the debt. And that debt
now,
for 20 years.
Now, okay, I tell you what, I'm going to have to hold it right there, and let's go ahead and take them up against a hard break. We're going to take a real short break, and then we'll come right back. Let me scroll down here just a second. Where did we go? There we are. All right. Don't go away. We'll be right back after a short break on Inside Tennessee.
Hello, this is Robin Zanner.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for RAD.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Michael Behrman, inviting you to join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on The Michael Behrman Show. Right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Jan Black. He's a candidate for the 7th District County Commission in Stewart County. And we're basically, he's responding to a letter from the county mayor in response to his letter. And this has to do with taxes and the financing of the new jail, the payment, the cost of the jail, the size, and things like that. In the letter, the mayor's letter, it says the first payment of the $8.2 million bond, and wait, think about that for a minute. Stewart County has roughly 13,000, 14,000 people in it, but we did pass an $8.2 million bond for a jail, along with a few other things that we really, really didn't need, like a ball field. It says the $8.2 million bond was not $560,000, as Mr. Black stated, but was $59,917.90. Now, where's the disconnect on the 560 versus the 59.9?
Okay, the disconnect is that the mayor is giving you what they're paying in interest until the bonds become due. The bonds don't come due till April of 2018, and they run from 2018 until 2038, 20 years, and
wow,
there is not one payment in that 20-year period that is under $560,000. He is right. It's not 560. It's actually $569,405.50. That's our first payment, which is due
started
in 2018,
in...
and it's okay, over $500,000 for every year for the next 20 years.
So they're just paying the 59.9. They're just paying the interest,
right,
for 5 years.
They're
not paying principal and interest until – okay, okay. All right. In the current fiscal year, the county will pay $213,568.75 on those bonds. The first full payment of interest is, and I think this is you responding here, $569,405.50 due on 4/18 for the next 20 years. Okay, Jim, all right. Total debt payment – remember, this is a county of roughly 13,000 people. Is, am I reading this right?
Total debt payment for the bonds?
Yeah.
It's over $13 million.
$13,168,524.68.
You're reading it correct.
Of,
that is right off of the resolution passed by the mayor and the county commissioners.
Wow.
So if there's any erroneous numbers, they're his.
All my numbers came
from the county budget and from the mayor's resolution.
Okay. Now I'm back to reading the mayor's letter. Our financial picture is good. His words, not yours, not mine. The county general and the debt service funds are projected to end better than the original budgeted numbers. We are also told that the general purpose school fund is expected to end with a strong surplus. With county funds doing so well, tax increases will not even be a topic of discussion at the next FY budget. If everything is so good, okay, then your question is, if everything is so good, why hasn't a budget been passed? And being as this is election time, maybe you want to fill in the blanks on that one a little bit and about the fact that when they were supposed to pass the budget and why they didn't and when they are going to revisit the budget.
Well, they're supposed to have the budget in place 1 July of every year. That's when the fiscal year begins for the county. And in June, they passed the continuing resolution, the same as our wonderful leaders in Washington do, so that they can continue to spend money without a viable budget or an actual budget. So what they've done is they've postponed that until after the election. So it's a pretty simple thing. Now, the folks, when I went to the safety meeting, the committee meeting, not one commissioner there, every commissioner stated that they did not know what the budget was going to be for this year. They knew that the budget was going to be rough. They were not going to have a lot of money. The county sheriff was there, and he did not even propose an increase in his budget because he said there's no funds. He said, I didn't waste my time to prepare a budget. So he's going with
the same. How does he know that?
He had last year.
So how does he know that? I mean, and the county mayor is saying everything is pretty good. So why is he saying that there's no money?
Well, because he knows there's no money, and so do the rest of the commissioners. The mayor is just being a politician, telling people what they want to hear instead of what they should be hearing, the truth.
The Budget and Finance Committee meetings have not yet begun. The budget process is still underway. This is the mayor talking. Departments submitted their budgets this past spring. And your question is, why no meeting of Budget and Finance if all the department budgets were submitted in the spring? So they're saying everything was submitted in the spring, but they couldn't pass it by, you said, what, the 1st of July?
End of June, right, the end of June. Well, I was at the meeting the end of June, and that's the first budget that had been submitted by the public safety group, which is fire, EMS, and the sheriff. So I don't know when his spring starts and when it ends. But the end of June is not spring.
No. And so how do you know those were the first ones?
Because they came there with their budget. As a matter of fact, I have a copy of their budgets.
Okay.
Their proposed
budget. It says those figures along with projected revenues have been compiled in the same fashion every year. So they don't meet the deadline every year. Is that what we take from that? Let's see. In June, the State Division of Audit informed our office, this is the mayor talking, that we were chosen to be one of the first counties in the state to have our year-end figures completed. Okay, what is year-end figures completed? That doesn't really –
well,
that doesn't say a whole lot.
Well, one point he says that they have their year-end figures completed. Well, what that means is you have your budget balanced. But if they had their budget balanced, they'd know exactly what their numbers are. What this is double talk.
Right.
If they actually had their budget, the final figures figured up, then they could have already had their budget for this fiscal year in place.
Yeah.
According to the commissioners, the five that were there out of the seven that were supposed to be there, they had never had a meeting with the mayor to discuss the budget. So,
wow,
the commissioners are the ones under law, the state of Tennessee, that propose and pass a budget for the county, not the mayor. So,
yeah.
Basically abdicated their responsibility to the mayor.
Yeah. And this is the mayor continuing on. Therefore, we shifted focus on getting all reporting done in time to meet the deadlines. But they didn't meet the deadline if they didn't have the budget done. Our county has been complimented several times on our ability to work so well with the State Division of Audit and the Office of State and Local Finance. But we haven't passed an audit in how long? Working well with and passing an audit are not the same thing.
Well, working well with the folks in Nashville and being able to pass an audit are two different things.
Yeah. Okay. And there's a few other things here that he says. And basically, he says Mr. Black is entitled to his own opinions, not his own facts. And you respond, the mayor, again, failed to act to present the facts. He approved the $8.2 million jail bond and knows exactly what the first full payment will cost the taxpayers in Stewart County. He failed to address the length of the commission meetings. Perhaps if they were to meet for a couple of hours instead of under 10 minutes, they would have a county budget in place on July 1st. Now, that happened both the last 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. Their budget meetings were under 10 minutes.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. This one here was about 8 minutes, and then the next meeting right after that was only 7 minutes, or 6 minutes, rather.
Good. Wow.
So if they would have a two-hour meeting, we're paying them to be there anyway. So if they're instead of having a six-minute meeting, if they were to have a two- or three-hour meeting, maybe the commissioners and the mayor could get a budget together.
Mm-hmm. They spent $52,000 on 1.35 acres of land on Highway 79 to build a new firehouse. Funds were to replace the Big Rock firehouse, but mayor chose to build it on 79. It could and should have been spent on Big Rock, land already owned. Good point. Land purchase market value of $35.7 million, so they paid more for it. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying they paid more than the market value of it.
Yeah.
Okay. The same as we did for the property we purchased for the ball field.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. We're just about out of time here. We've got just a couple of minutes. And like I said, you're running in the 7th District, and I know that they are hoping that you get beat because they know that if you do get elected, they're going to have one guy there who they can't pull the wool over your eyes. You know how the things are supposed to work, and you won't let them get away with it. And good luck to you. And have you got anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, I just hope that the residents of District 7 get out and vote if they want to change what's going on in Stewart County. It's the only way to make a change is to take off in a new direction, and the direction we're headed now is not good.
No, not a bit. Well, hey, Jan, good luck to you. We're definitely pulling for you, and I thank you for coming on. We'll make a cut of this, and I'll get it out to you, and we'll see if it's usable. Maybe we can distro it out there.
Okay, good enough. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. All right, we've got a little less than 20 minutes left, and I've got several people on the line here that they are part of the group that created the Protect Tennessee Borders. I mentioned that at the opening of the show. I've mentioned it the last couple of weeks, in fact, that, as we know, the federal government has failed to secure our borders. And if you believe in the 10th Amendment, then it just stands to reason that we now have to look to our state government to protect Tennessee borders, protect Tennessee citizens, and do something about the mess the federal government has created. So we've got Karen Bracken on the line. We've got Lynn Moss. And we might have Mark West here in a little bit. And Lynn and Karen, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Doing fine. I appreciate you coming on.
Doing great. This is Lynn.
Hey, Lynn. I think it's the first time I've talked to you, Lynn, but Karen, I did recognize your voice, and I've heard a lot of good things about you as well, Lynn. I know Karen's all over the state, but I know that you're busy as well, so I appreciate both of you coming on. And if you could, until the others join us, just tell us a little bit about how we come to have this petition and how the whole thing got started and why it's so important.
Well,
go ahead, Lynn.
Things were going crazy on the border, as we've all seen, and I got an email from Steve Osborne, great guy in East Tennessee, and he said, I really think we need a firm push from the entire state of Tennessee. We need to say something for the entire state. And so we decided to have a conference call. We invited leaders from across the state. And we got on this conference call. There were probably seven or eight of us. And we came up with this letter, which was basically to Haslam, telling him that he needed to protect the borders of Tennessee from these illegal aliens that were being brought into the country. That if, you know, the United States federal government, Obama, they're not going to protect the southern border. These people are coming in. We needed the state of Tennessee's borders to be protected. And so we, Mark West, as you know very well, he's a great, wonderful guy. He jumped on. He had a friend who's an IT guy, and within a couple of days, we had a website, we had a Facebook page, we had the letter drafted to Haslam, and then we were asking for supporters. And in very little time, we have gained just hundreds and hundreds of supporters who actually, with their groups, represent over 100,000 supporters backing this effort with a letter to get to Haslam.
Wow. Well, I know it hasn't been very long, maybe a week and a half, and Mark's with us now. How you doing tonight, Mark?
Doing great, Dave. Thanks for having us on the show and sharing the information about this effort that a lot of people have come together on, and it's really gained some good momentum, I believe.
Well, good. It sounds like it, and I appreciate what you guys did on it, and I appreciate you coming on the show. So, I mean, you know, this is not something that's going to happen overnight necessarily. You know, the sooner the better, but are some other things in the works to put some pressure on the governor and the other legislators about this?
Well, I know the letter was delivered to Governor Haslam, correct?
No, it's being delivered. We've decided to hold off until after the election.
Good.
Because
there's okay.
So much stuff going on, so we're going to do it
right.
Next week.
That's good. Okay, I thought it was going to be delivered before, and that's good. I'm glad it's going to wait till after.
Yeah, you know, there has been a lot of interest in this, not by just the citizens, but we actually encouraged legislators, candidates, to sign on to the letter as well, and we've had a pretty good response, even some names that most people would probably even recognize. Some leaders in the legislature. We've had one of the first ones to sign it, believe it or not, was House Representative Gerald McCormick.
Yeah, that surprised me. That really surprised me.
Yeah, he had. I had. Of course, all of us emailed the representatives and elected officials that we knew personally, and so we were surprised at some of them that signed on, but. Most recently, the last one to sign on was Rick Womack, and then Janice Bowling signed on. So we've got you can go to the website and actually see exactly who has signed. We've got a pretty good list of elected officials. But then we've also posted on our Facebook page some regular updates, which include the letters that the House Speaker and Lieutenant Governor have signed to the governor, which are actually pretty good letters. They're pretty strong letters, and I think in the letter to the federal legislators, elected officials as well from our state legislature, that's a good letter as well. So I think there's some good pressure mounting from just beyond just our group.
Good. And you know, it's going to take that because we've let the 10th Amendment, it's just kind of been almost a mere historical document for so long that, you know, a lot of people didn't even realize, I think, that it existed. You know, one of the few good things that came out of the Obamacare decision was that Justice Roberts, by no means a hard right conservative, said that states have powers under the 10th Amendment. They just have to be willing to use them. And I think in Tennessee, with the weak governor that we have, that means we have to put pressure on him, and we have to put pressure on our elected representatives and at the state level and our state senators that, hey, you know, the federal government failing is not an excuse for you not upholding your oath and doing your job.
Exactly. Have you given folks the web address yet in case they want to check it out?
I did earlier, but it's protecttnborders.com, right?
That's right. And then we have a Facebook page, too. Just type in Protect Tennessee Borders, and they can go there, like it, and be updated that way as well. We've had a, you know, well over 1,000 people that have already liked the page and growing. So it's been a good response.
How many people?
Yeah, I'm looking at the page right now, and there's 1,189 likes on the Facebook page.
Yeah, and that's basically in a week and a half or so, which is pretty phenomenal.
Right. I had sent
especially
the letter.
Go ahead, Karen.
Okay, I had sent the letter to all of our state legislators, both Republican and Democrat, House reps and senators. So every single one of them has been made aware of this. I did get a response back from Senator Mike Bell that a lot of the legislators are meeting and discussing and concerned about this issue. So,
well, that's good. And I think after the election, that's when we can really, really start putting some pressure on them. And like I say, I think just remove all doubt from their minds that, you know, just blaming Obama and just blaming the feds is not going to get it. And what are some of the, just since I've got you guys on the line here, what are some of your ideas maybe of things that we would like, that you'd like to see the state do to basically demagnetize our state? Do you have any ideas, any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it sounds almost too simplistic, but the name of the website is a good place to start, Protect Our Borders. And what that means, in my view, would be obviously you're not going to, you know, put a fence around our borders, but you're going to communicate very strongly if you're the governor and you're locked arms with not only your legislature, but you've got hundreds of thousands of citizens that are supporting you. You're going to send a strong message to Barack Obama and his various agencies that he's in control of that, you know, any further intrusion or delivery of illegal aliens into our state will not be accepted or tolerated, and even threaten him with some type of a legal action. But it starts with a strong statement of this will not happen versus please notify me if this is going to happen. That's the stance that Affleck has taken.
His first response was terrible. Almost like I don't mind you doing this over. I just want to know about it in advance.
I mean, can you imagine as a parent telling?
Cleaned up version.
Can you imagine telling your kids as a parent? Well, I'd like a curfew, but just tell me when you plan on coming home at night. You know, I mean, that's absurd.
You
set the boundaries, and then if he crosses the boundaries, then he's violated, you know, what you said was the boundary. And then I think you go to the next step. But that sounds simplistic, but unbelievably, it takes a lot of courage, apparently, for this governor to even send a letter like that.
Yeah. Well, and my thought is if they can be bused and flown here, they can be bused and flown out of here. And I think that's
exactly
what our state needs to be willing to do. As soon as we find them, okay, we bust them, send them to D.C. D.C. wanted them, D.C.'s got them.
Right.
Same thing with the, they fly them in, they land, we don't let them download, or we keep them contained until we get them on the next plane to D.C., and they land in D.C., or if we can work it out with Texas, we'll send them back down there, whatever the case might be. But I think we have to do that. And something else that really irritates me is one of the – and I think this was in a letter that Beth Harwell sent and Ron Ramsey, and what they were talking about doing, but they had to do it within federal guidelines. I'm like, well, now, wait a minute. If the federal government is ignoring federal law on immigration, why should the states be bound by federal law on immigration?
Yeah, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, but not in Barack Obama's world, you know.
Right. But I just think that's how those are the kind of stands that we're going to have to insist that they make. And I know that's not the governor's inclination, but if I think that maybe if we can put enough pressure on our elected reps to tell them that's what we expect and that's what we're, you know, we'll settle for nothing less, then they'll have no choice but to put pressure on the governor. And I think if he's got his House and his Senate putting that kind of pressure on him, he'll have to ignore the president and do the right thing.
The letter that Beth Harwell and Ron Ramsey sent to the governor on July 30th, I think I was pleased to see this language. It says, we ask that this was sent to, this was sent to the federal delegation, our House and Senate members. It says, we ask the federal government to suspend all forced federal refugee settlement into our state immediately. Now, why does that have to come from Lieutenant Governor and Speaker? Why could that not have come from our governor, you know, a demand?
Yeah, and I'm sure they saw that as well on the other end. I'm sure they didn't overlook that, and that's, you know, it's a shame that we couldn't have had a Rick Perry type.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So do we have a set date for the rollout after the election, or are we just going to kind of get together later and figure that one out?
It's going to be next week, for sure next week. We're trying to time the who can be in Nashville when from the group, our delegation, and then also coordinate it with the legislators and governor, make sure that they're going to be in their offices as well. So that's, and when I say that, I mean Beth Harwell, Ron Ramsey, and Bill Haslam. So those would coordinating their schedules with our team schedule and then alerting the media. So it will be probably the middle of next week.
Okay. Well, we've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to go down the line here. And Lynn, do you have anything you want to add?
I did want to say, in case people aren't aware, Jed Messini has proposed a bilateral session of the legislature to come in to discuss this issue. We're also waiting for Haslam to respond to that. There's been no response that I've gotten since, but I did want to give him some credit there and call attention to that. And I also wanted to thank you so much for allowing us to be on to tell people about this tonight. Thank you so much.
Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on. This is an important issue, and I tell you what, as soon as the elections are over, we need to get hot and heavy on this. Karen, you got anything you want to add?
No, just, you know, it was an honor to work with this team and to thank Mark for his tireless efforts in all the work he did to pull this together. We had a website up in a couple of days and Facebook page and letters going, and this whole thing was pulled together rather quickly, but I think, you know, extremely well and very professionally done. So, again, it was just an honor to work with the group.
And I look forward to working with all of you on this in the future, and I appreciate you all coming on. And God bless you, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Appreciate you doing
it.
Bye.
I appreciate y'all coming on. Take care, and we'll talk to you later. Well, we are just about out of time. As I said earlier, this is the last show. I want to thank the listeners. I appreciate the people that had some faithful listeners. I appreciate those people that helped spread the word about this show, like Karen Bracken. She would always forward blast out there and let everybody know. Jerry Williams. Thanks again to Tennessee Action Council and Tennessee Republican Assembly. Thanks, Sharon Ford. Appreciate Kurt Blackwood. He's always been there to help me out with this when I got in a spot, and I appreciate his help. And just thanks to everybody who made this possible. I hope to be back in the not too distant future on another channel. I did enjoy it. I do enjoy it, and I appreciate it very much, the opportunity, and just stay in the fight out there. And thanks again, and God bless everybody. Good night.